Question number one. Is there a hadith about respect being an emotional need? So what I'm assuming by this question is that when I'm looking for the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt, I don't know, can you guys hear me or no? All right. Can you guys hear me now?
No.
All right. Are we good to go?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So what I'm assuming by the question, and again, if I'm not answering the question appropriately, or if it's not the question that you have, inshallah, you'll explain to me so that I can answer it in a more precise fashion. A question is this, that when, for instance, I hear a hadith that respect is an emotional need, is there a hadith that explicitly states that the Prophet of Allah, for example, said, Ya Ali, respect is an emotional need. Take care of that, for instance. Is that what we're looking for? Okay. So what happens is that sometimes when we're going and looking for hadith and we're writing about, for instance, marriage or another topic in Islam, we're not going to always find the hadith stating the exact same statement. Sometimes we'll have to extrapolate it from the hadith. Now, there's a scary hadith, which I didn't say because I was scared of the sisters. It's a scary hadith, but it'll kind of demonstrate the point, which I said, I tried to say it a nice way and stuff like that. And sisters, bear with me, because again, if you act in accordance to this hadith, your husband will be eating out of your hand. You'll be winning, you'll be successful. It's not a problem, it's not an issue. Okay? So bear with me. Okay. What the hadith actually states is this. It's from the Prophet of Allah, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It says that, and I'm going to give you another hadith after that to soften the blow. It says that if I were to command anyone to prostrate before anyone, I would tell the wife to prostrate before her husband. So somebody might, how dare the Prophet say that? I'm angry at Prophet. What is the Prophet? But instead of getting loud, you know, it's not my words. That, let me study and see what the hadith is trying to say. What we have in other hadith, they say that women have the ability to rob a man of his intellect. I told you before that men are simple. Hadith, the actual words of the hadith. That the Prophet says, I'm surprised that a group like you, he's talking about the women, and he describes them in a certain fashion. And he says that a woman can steal the intellect of a man. Now, if you have a wife, and inshallah, tomorrow I'll get a chance to explain some of those other instructions of the Ahlul Bayt. If she's carrying out those instructions, and one of them is respecting her husband, and not saying, no, we're equals. You sit down, baby. Wagging her head. No, not like, instead of being like that. Right? If she's a little bit respectful and deferring and stuff like that, for your average, ordinary guy, this guy will reciprocate. He'll respond. So what happens is that, yes, it is an emotional need. The way the wording of the hadith was slightly different. But what we can understand from that is two things. One of them is that men have that emotional need for the women to be respectful of them. Women also have an emotional need to show respect for their husband. And if they do that, the husband basically will be obeying them. We have to strengthen the husbands. We have hadith about that. Don't obey your wife, because men will. And I'm not saying don't take her on board. I'm not. You take her on board, you right? But at the same time, should the wife be running the household, or should we go the same way the verse of Quran, "Ar-rijal qawamuna 'ala an-nisa"? The man is in charge of the household. He's responsible. We should go that way. But believe me, sisters, it's not going to lead to oppression. So yes, it is an emotional need, but in the way that I explained it. So we won't always look for the exact same word from the hadith, but we'll extrapolate a logical meaning, which is backed up by riwayat, hadith, experience, and so on. Okay, now we've got another question. You mentioned about showing affection to your spouse. What about if your spouse is resentful or they're showing resistance to what you're doing? How do you deal with this and break this barrier? Okay, so let me rephrase the question. Inshallah, if I haven't understood it correctly, then inshallah, you'll help me out. Okay, there's one time when, for instance, I hear that I'm supposed to show a lot of affection for my spouse, and the spouse is showing a little bit of resentment towards me. So when I say I love you, I care about you, then they're not saying, well, I love you and I care about you back. They're still a little bit miffed or upset. So sometimes what this happens, sometimes let's say that I'm a man and I'm talking to a woman, right? My wife is a little bit resistant. She's not happy. She's not reciprocating when I'm doing this. Okay? Something else that's mentioned in the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt. They say that Jamalur Rajul, the beauty of a man is in his tongue. The beauty of a man, you should learn to sweet talk your wife. Sweet talk. So even if my wife, like for instance, I come over, I say I love you, and she doesn't respond, right? Make sure there's some other instructions of the Ahlul Bayt, which inshallah we'll learn about, and then after that implement, but we don't give up. You find a way of explaining, no, I do love you, I do care about you, however you have to do that. You don't give up and say, okay, well they pulled away from me, so immediately I just turn away from that individual. Instead, I'll go close, talk to them, love them, respect. And sometimes the reason the person is resistant is because of some other previous behavior. It wasn't the beginning of the marriage. The first time I came to my wife, for instance, and I said, I love you, then she responded in this way. Maybe I've been kind of running over her feelings. I've not been doing the right thing. I have been kind of cruel to her. So the wife would respond, for instance, in this way, that they don't automatically reciprocate. So one thing is to try and find out whether those other problems were, the other things that I've been ignoring in the meantime. And then after that, implement those things, but don't give up on showing those signs of affection. Sometimes when the wife is pulling away, if it's a woman who's a brother who's written the question, sometimes when a woman is pulling away, it's because she really needs more affection. She needs you to still show that you care. She needs to be pursued throughout the marriage. The same process that you did in the beginning of the marriage. So you pursue her, you talk to her, you give her gifts and stuff like that, and you don't get tired of it. So that's one. The other one is, for instance, if it's a woman who has written a question, and a sister who's saying that the husband is not responding to me, showing or explaining how much I care about them. Remember the point I made before that sometimes if you're not respecting the husband, sometimes he's not going to feel very loved. So again, we want to look for some of those other things that perhaps I'm not doing right, the other instructions that are given by the Ahlul Bayt, and see if I'm... But I don't want to give up being loving and caring and stuff like that. Oh, you're not going to be friendly with me, so then I will not be friendly with you. Sometimes we've done kind of damage to our emotional relationship. It takes a little while to build the relationship back up. So we shouldn't give up. Well, I heard this hadith, I implemented it yesterday, and today I don't see a result, so then the hadith... No. Takes time. We've been doing the wrong thing for a while. Now we want to turn it back around and we want to go the opposite way. So sometimes it's like that. We want to build up with that. The next one is a little bit sometimes tough to answer, but it's okay. What role should the parents play in spouse selection? What role should my parents play in spouse selection? Both for the brother and the sister who's potentially trying to get married, it is a condition that they be pleased with the marriage. Nobody can force marriage on anybody. They can't, you know, I'm going to make you marry this particular individual. We don't have that, not in Islam. Now, what normally happens is that our parents care about us, and in some cultures, what the parents will do is that they will do the approaching the spouse for me. Meaning, like for instance, My mom will go to a wedding, for instance. This happens in some cultures. My mom goes to a wedding. She sees a nice sister over there. She approaches the girl. She sees the girl's a good girl. She comes back to me, gets a little bit of approval, then goes over, and then my family is kind of selecting in that way. But what I would emphasize here, so it's not wrong that the person tries to introduce a spouse to me. That's okay. Can they force it on me? No. Should I also do my own research? Yes. Meaning that there's traits that the Ahlul Bayt have said your potential spouse should have. Try and find out, do your part of the bargain so that after that you can say to Allah that I've done my duty. I tried my best to get these qualities that the Ahlul Bayt mentioned in the hadith, but if I sit back and I don't make any effort, then sometimes I have to blame myself. That's one. The other one is that unless my parents are doing the same things, I tell my parents, Mom or Dad, I'm looking for a spouse that has this quality, this quality, this quality. They say, we've looked, we've checked. And then for me, I say that, okay, I've idmi nan. I'm sure that this person has these qualities. Alhamdulillah, I go forward and I get married. So is it the spouse, the parents can help, they can assist, and sometimes it's useful for us. They can go, they make the approach. It's not just me on my own. Does it mean that it's incorrect for me sometimes to approach directly? No, we're not saying that that's wrong, that I can't, right? That's not, however, can they force it? No. So I don't know if, again, this answers the question or if they had something which was more specific. Okay, now this is another one that's really tough. Okay, it's customary in many Asian families to live in joint families. So what is the Islamic viewpoint on this? Okay, so now whoever wrote this question wants to see a sheikh get sacrificed. But it's okay for you brothers or you sisters, whoever. What happens is that from an Islamic point of view, what scholars say, and again, when we hear this, the answer of Islam, let's not go to extremes on one way or the other, right? For instance, one of the things that scholars say is that it's a little bit more difficult to live in a family with everybody. Meaning I'm living in one house, my mom, my dad, my brothers, my sisters, everybody, we're all staying in one house. And I'm married and I have, for instance, even kids, or I don't have kids, it's the beginning of the marriage. So one thing that's slightly difficult is what the scholars say, I'm talking spiritual teachers. They say that one of the problems is that you have to observe everyone's right. You have to observe your mother's right, your father's right. And now there's sometimes interfering, right? In some households, the mom might also have something to say to your wife. Your wife has something to say, right? So sometimes observing all of those rights becomes difficult. Observing everybody's rights becomes difficult. So now, one way of taking this, though, is to go to the other extreme, to say that, okay, what I'll do is I'll put my parents in an old folks' home and I'll go live by myself. Alhamdulillah, Islam just said... That's another, going to another extreme. Sometimes it's obligatory for you to take care of your parents. The other one is that if you are able to live in harmony with everybody, there's more thawab in that. There's more thawab. If you are able to live in a household and everybody's all together, then that's more thawab in that. But what scholars recommend is that ideally, it's better for us to live separately. Everybody's rights can be observed more easily. Sometimes the right of the spouse, for instance, the wife has a need, for instance, to be beautiful and to dress up and to be appreciated. So sometimes if we're staying in a situation where my brothers are there, the wife is basically always in hijab. Another one that's there is that non-mahrams are actually supposed to be separated from one another. So sometimes when we're in that situation, and again, I'm not saying that it's wrong, it's evil, it's better. Somebody's asking the question, that which one is better? Sometimes it's better. That way she can have her needs fulfilled. It makes it easier for me to observe the other people's rights. It doesn't mean I neglect my parents or I don't take care of my parents or if it's necessary for us all to live together. But sometimes it's better for us to live separately. Okay, next question. Islam has selected us on how to marry a good wife. Why is it that the Prophet wasallam was married? Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The Prophet was married to some women who were not so nice. That the example you're saying is that Islam is teaching us to do this, but however we see that the Prophet of Allah married some other individuals. There are different reasons for the Prophet's actions, why he married particular individuals, and the wisdom behind that, and how this proved to be in the greatest interest of Islam. We're not going to get into that right now. What we're going to say is that I'm looking for my own taklif. So just because the Prophet married an individual and the marriage either didn't work out properly or the people weren't all that happy and stuff like that, it doesn't mean that that example for me is that I ignore all of those hadith from the Ahlul Bayt which said that look for a wife which has this quality, this quality, this quality, and find somebody who will make you unhappy and then marry that person and say, why is it that I'm having difficulty in the marriage? No, Islamically I should go and try and look for those qualities and go for that. So I hope it answers the question. It continues over here. It says that the wives of Imam Hassan, the imams of Imam Taqi, they were actually poisoned by their husbands. So it does happen that way, right? That it goes... So now, but I mean, does that mean, just from a logical point of view, that I look for a wife who has tendencies, you know, she's a little bit of a psychopath? Obviously, that's not even the intention of the person who wrote the question. They're saying, well, look, we see that in the life. So there were some other wisdoms as to why they married these different women, some other wisdoms. These people were not the moms or the mothers of the a'immah. The mothers of the a'immah were very noble, very sharif, very those other traits that were there mentioned. But there were other reasons why the Prophet of Allah would marry, for instance, or the imams would marry. They're connecting with other tribes. There's a lot of other reasons behind it. So for us, we will still feel comfortable in trying to take those the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, which they say about checking for who your spouse is, trying to marry a good person, those qualities of a good spouse. But it is true that these things did happen, and you know there's wisdom behind it. Okay, let me see if I can understand this question properly. And then this, let's say the mother, there's a son in a family, right? Mother and her oldest son or her only son. The mother sometimes, she feels a little bit insecure after her husband, her son gets married. That now her son, who used to be doting on her, caring about her, showing, spending time with her, being nice to her, now he's going to start spending all of his time with this new girl, the new one. And I'll be neglected. Nobody will be coming and visiting me and caring about me and stuff like that. So what kind of advice can you have to do that? And then the question even gets a little bit more dangerous. And hopefully they're not recording this, right? But they say, if I have to choose between my mother and my wife, then it doesn't say that choose between the two. They say, who should I listen to? Right? My wife says, do this particular thing. My mother says to do another thing. So now, what do I do? Okay. We're going to have to be a little bit sophisticated now. One of the things that I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to make sure that my mother does feel loved. I realize that my mother actually does care about me. It's not that my mother doesn't want me to marry. We're talking about a normal mom. But at the same time, that close, the time that we had, I used to spend so much time in the house, walking, talking, helping her out, stuff like that. Now, obviously, that some of that time will be taken. I still will make sure that mom still feels loved. I spend time, I come over, kiss her hand, talk to her, all of these things. But at the same time, remember that it's also your duty to take care of your wife. So people go to one of two extremes sometimes. Sometimes all of the attention is with my wife. I don't pay any time with the mother. Some people go to the opposite extremes. And I'll just give you a practical example. There was one guy, very good Shia, very good mu'min, and he actually would do a lot of service for the community. But this guy, for years after he got married, what he would do is he would get off work, let's say at 8 o'clock. He would go over to see his parents until 12 at night. Then he would come home and crash in the house. So no time with the wife, no conversation, how are you doing, right? And why was he doing this though? He said, because respect of the parents is wajib. So you see how shaitan can come in here? So from an Islamic point of view, they say in the hadith, khairul umur awsatuha, the best path is the middle path. I'll still make sure my mom feels loved, attention, caring, but at the same time, I'll have that time for my spouse, take my spouse out to the park, talk with her, walk with her, buy her nice things. I'll do it for mom also. And I'll make sure that the both sides feel loved and the attention and the caring and calling them up in the middle of the day and how are you doing? One thing to keep in mind, this sometimes helps, And that is that when you want to visit somebody, remember that sometimes you don't have to visit for a long time. Sometimes you can have a short visit, and a short visit still means a lot to the person. So I'll give you a practical example. One time, I used to spend a lot of time with my mother. Another time, I come over, and I just drop by for a little bit of tea. Mom, how are you doing? What's going on? Is there anything I can get for you? Shopping? Anything. But then after that, I go on and move to the house. It's still a visit. It still counts. People still feel loved. So that was one part of the question. The other part is that if the mother and the wife say the different things, and inshallah, this never happens, right? But if they're both saying, you know, opposite things. Let's see if we can come to a logical conclusion. First of all, maybe we can see that, okay, well, Islamically, what should I do? One of the things that we give instructions, and this is coming from Ayatollah Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Republic. He says that it is the job of everybody, the older generation and the younger generation, to preserve the marriage. The older generation, one of their jobs is to make sure that the couple doesn't start to dislike one another. Sometimes this happens in a marriage, that the parents are actually interfering with whatever niyat or whatever reason and stuff like that. But, you know, your wife said this and this said the other, and your wife is like this, or your husband, right? And actually, from an Islamic point of view, neither her parents or your parents, neither one is supposed to be actually making the two not feel in love with one another. They're supposed to be reinforcing that. And we all have a duty to protect that inner core. So if that means that it's going to lead to divorce, problems, issues, and stuff like that, then at the same time I'm careful and respectful to the mother, at the same time I'm going to preserve that inner core. If there's a more precise answer or a precise question, then inshallah, ask me after the jalasa, and we'll do that. Okay. How do you overcome the cultural and age differences between parents and their children when it comes to choosing a spouse? One of the first things I should say in defense of parents is that, as a general rule, your parents want what's best for you. They would sacrifice. They have sacrificed for you. They are sacrificing for you. Your success means everything to them. So they're looking out for your best interest. Maybe they'll make a mistake in the misdoc, meaning that they chose a person who wasn't appropriate for you or something like that. But it's not that my parents are out to get me. We don't want to take that approach. Okay. So when I'm taking that approach that they love and care about me, but selection of the spouse is actually something that I'm supposed to do. I'm going to be living with that person. So if the parents are going to choose somebody for me who I know we're not going to succeed, right? They're choosing somebody. They think they're a really good person. But I know I personally, because of my own problems, issues, whatever, I'm not going to be able to observe this person's right. Then before the marriage, I'm going to have to be a little bit strong, still loving, caring, responsible, everything, but a little bit strong, and not marry that person who I know I won't be able to observe their rights. Instead of bringing that, because I can't say no to my mom, I can't say no to my dad, I'll bring another person into my life and then punish them for the next 80 years. Instead, if I'm not strong enough to do that, I'm not going to be compatible with that spouse. Instead, I'll be a little bit stronger in the beginning, find a nice way of saying, explaining to my parents and stuff like that, that I'll do that. So that's one way of trying to overcome these difficulties. Okay. Okay. This question, it starts out with Assalamu alaikum wa alaikum assalam. What are the rights of the women whose husbands remarry without the consent of the first wife? And when the wife is unaware of his intentions and plans, and I am a wife who actually respects my husband. So it's not that I'm somebody who disrespects Islam or I don't. My husband is actually important for me. But my husband went ahead and he got married without my consent. So if you're saying from an Islamic point of view, does the husband have to get the permission of his wife or otherwise the marriage is invalid? No. Now, it would be nicer for the husband to say, okay, well, look, there's somebody else who's going to be coming into our life, into our family. I'm going to be having children with this person. All of my children are going to be. So try and get somebody who's compatible. And if the wife was, you know, was mature enough to say, okay, well, if this is going to happen, let me be part of the decision and let me find, try and help to work to find somebody who's compatible, because Islam has given you that right. So instead of me fighting and choosing, you know, choose me or her, instead of doing that, that I work with you to do that. But if he's already, I'm assuming that this has already happened. If this has already happened, then Islamically, because it is not the white right of the wife, I don't want to pick a make this my battle, draw a line in the sand. You violated Allah's laws because you married without prior permission. No, that's Allah. Instead, let's make the best of the situation from now on. So, again, it doesn't mean that the husband should disrespect her or honor, but like we're saying now that I'm in a situation where he's already married. Maybe he already has children. So now in this situation, let me make the best of this particular situation. I'll try my best to get along with the new sister, get to know her, work with my husband, make sure that the husband also work hard. It takes a little bit more sophistication to make sure the first wife feels loved. She doesn't feel neglected and stuff like that. So it's a longer discussion. We're going into the whole discussion of polygamy and stuff like that. But since we're talking about a situation that's already happened in the past, Islamically, he didn't have to get permission from her. But if you're planning to do this, you know, nastajiru billah min shururi anfusina, if you're planning to do this, then it would be better for you to get your wife and bring your wife on board and try and talk to her. If you get married and then divorce, is that person still mahram to you? No. Once you get divorced, that person becomes another non-mahram. Now, because we're divorced, now I have to observe the hijab and the other laws of Islam, the laws of interaction of men and women, I have to observe those. During the iddah, that's something different. Okay, maybe the question, like the brother is saying that, okay, well, what about during the iddah? It's an iddah, meaning that I've gotten divorced, and while I'm divorced, meaning like I'm getting divorced, I'm going through the waiting period, the iddah, and now at this stage, is my husband still mahram to me? Yes. And there's also special instructions of the Ahlul Bayt about what to do during this waiting period. The husband is not supposed to kick the wife out of the house, they're supposed to still be in the house, and the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt is that she wear her best clothes. She dress up nice. In some of the hadith, choose whatever she wants to wear. Makeup, doers, right? And present herself to her husband. This is the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt. So yes, if you're still in the waiting period, dress up, gorgeous, nice, sweet, right? And present yourself, this is the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt, and just strut back and forth, be nice, be sweet, right? The hadith say that maybe if you do this, then the marriage, the love, Allah will put the love back in the heart of the husband. And then you know in Islam, ruju and returning back to the wife is very easy. So during that waiting period, dress up, look good, present yourself to your husband, go all out. Okay. You are still mahram if that's. But after it's over, then obviously you know. Okay, what does one do if they find out you have lost love and more? Okay. Okay, what do you do if you find out, or what does one do if you find out that you have lost love and even more importantly, respect for your husband? Okay, to live with somebody you don't respect is near impossible. So would this be a good enough reason to divorce? So let me just give you a scenario. The scenario is this. First of all, salawat bar Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The scenario is this, that unfortunately, both myself and my husband, or either my husband or myself, but most of the time in a marriage situation, both sides are neglecting the rights of the other. Whatever the case, I was neglecting his rights, he was neglecting my rights. Now it's reached a stage that I don't have any respect or any love for this individual. At this stage, is this good enough reasons to get a divorce? We just call it quits? These things can be regained. If both husband and wife want to get back together, they want to do the right thing, because From an Islamic point of view, once you do get married, first you fight for the marriage. There are some times when we will advise you to divorce. If you get to a stage that you cannot observe the rights of Allah, you're violating this person's rights, you're going to go to the hellfire, they're going to go to the hellfire. Because both of you are just, you refuse to listen to Allah's laws. Yes, at this stage, then divorce is better. But if it's not at that stage, and many times it's not, if you just will change your behavior and be positive, and the other person will make some small concessions, you can save marriages. Inshallah, tomorrow we'll get a chance to talk about some of the other things. But believe me, if somebody is actually going through a situation like this, then inshallah we can get in contact, we can talk, and I can explain to you some basic information. And if you do these things, you can fall back in love again. The love, respect, all of these things will come. But you have to do it for the sake of Allah. You have to be willing to fight. You have to make effort and struggle and stuff like that. But it doesn't mean that we should just cash it in and throw it away and stuff like that. You can save marriages. A lot of marriages, when you go beat down, there are small issues that the person is not observing, small rights of the other person, and it turns the marriage completely off. So many marriages can be saved if we will just submit to the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt. And this also has salam, so wa alayka salam, or alaykum as-salam. It's a sister, so. Okay. How can I get my husband to pray namaz? How can I get my husband to pray namaz? Sometimes this is another difficult thing. Obviously, none of us can force another person. We have in the hadith, not in hadith, ayat of Quran, it says, إِنَّكَ لَا تَحْدِي مَنْ أَحْبَبْتَ. Surely you don't guide the one who you love. وَلَكِنَ اللَّهِ يَهْدِي مَنْ يَشَاءُ. Allah guides the one who He loves. You can't force the deen into anybody's heart. Make the لا إكراه في الدين. It's impossible to make somebody believe, make somebody worship. So what you can do is you can do your role in assisting that person to come back to the right way, talking about these issues, explaining these issues, but you can't make somebody pray. So bearing that in mind, then let's sit down with my spouse. And again, when we're doing Amr Ma'ruf and Nahi Munkar, and this is an obvious case of that, we try and look and see if it's going to be effective or not. And if it's going to be effective, try a softer approach first and then work our way. We're looking for what's most effective. So sometimes if we will sit our spouse down and try and find out perhaps the reason that they're not praying, why they don't feel that it's so important, and explain to them both their role between them and God and try and get them to fear Allah a little bit more. If there's a way of, if it's because you don't wake up on time or something like that, I'll help you to wake up on time. If they do it, let's say they go over, they start praying, you keep talking to them about it, they start praying, make sure you give that person encouragement. Your behavior becomes even better, even sweeter. When they're not making salah, make sure that you're still observing all of their rights and stuff like that. Because if you're a person, I nag my husband, I don't dress up in the house, I don't respect him, I do all of these different things, and then I'm like, but you're not making salah, then he's not going to really listen to you. But if you're doing all of the other things, and you beg him sweetly and gently, that husband who I'm doing everything for, it will mean so much to me if you were also praying, if the kids could see that their dad was praying. Many times these more positive approaches will work a little bit longer. So if there's a longer explanation, then I'll try and go. Okay. If you're interested in someone and you got to know them for a marriage purpose, so I met somebody and I'm interested in them and I want to get married to them, and I found out that their family is not going to allow it, what are you supposed to do? When both the girl and the boy want to get married. The boy and the girl want to get married. The parents are stopping the marriage. Now this is a tough one, because one of the things that we have in Islam is actually what fiqh says, what the ahkam and the rulings of Islam say. So from the point of view of the rulings of Islam, the parents don't have the right, for instance, to keep their son from marrying. They can't. You know what I mean? They don't have that right to say that I'm not going to allow. He doesn't need their permission to marry, for instance. Now, when it comes to a girl who's a virgin, then again, the rule is slightly different. But then there are also certain circumstances where if the parents refuse, and it's a person who, the person needs to get married, and they refuse, and they're their equal, shara'an, and orphan, that the person actually won't need the permission in order to make the marriage legal and legitimate. So because this is a specific situation, what I recommend that the person do is that they email, and then if they email, then I can find out exactly what's going on in the situation, and then you can see shara'an what you do. But just some general information. Normally when you're getting married, you're marrying that person and their family, meaning you're going to deal with their family at some stage. So you and the brother have to decide, or you and the sister have to decide, that if the family is later on not happy with the marriage, my family and their family, and they're not going to be supportive of us, will we still be able to continue? Realistically. Right now we're very much in love, we would love to be together and stuff like that, but will we be able to be strong enough for one another? That's one. The other one, is there a way of talking to my parents, convincing my parents that it's possible for me to marry this person? If we just talk to them, we convince them. Many times we'll find that there is a way if I keep working hard enough. Are there any relatives who I can get involved, who perhaps if they talk to my parents, then they would get them to get married? So because of the specific situation, I explained from a fiqhi point of view, from the boy's side, he doesn't need actual permission to marry. It's not that if I don't get permission, then I'm not able to. From the girl, she does, but under certain circumstances, if the parents are being really unreasonable under certain circumstances, she's not going to have that permission. So, and bearing that in mind, but still, we want to have the pleasure of the parents. We want to have the parents there with us. So is there a realistic and logical way for me to get that involved? And we'll try and look for that way. Is the istikhara recommended for the purpose of marriage? Just very briefly about istikhara. In istikhara, what happens is that we talk to the ulama, we get their advice. They say that if you can make a decision on your own about a particular issue, then you make that decision. If you can't make a decision on your own, then seek advice of others. And then when they give you advice, tell them to tell you why they're saying this particular issue. Instead of them making a decision for you, you listen to what they have to say, and then you benefit by that, and then you make the decision. Last, they say, if you're in a situation where I don't know, I can't tell logically that this is in my interest. Based on the teachings of Islam, this is my interest. I don't know that. I'm in a state, to me, either both sides seem good. Then staying in that state of being in between is actually worse. So what they say at this stage, make istikhara. And go one side or the other. So now, when it comes to marriage, if you see everything is there, and you can see obviously that this is the right person for you, then I can make that logical decision that this is for me. Because remember about istikhara, istikhara is not there to tell you the future. Istikhara doesn't tell you the future. Istikhara tells you what your duty is right now. So perhaps what would be better in some situations is to pray to Allah, oh God, if this is not good for me, then keep it away from me. If it's not good for me, then keep it away from me. So instead of making istikhara and trying to say, because I can see that based on the obvious things, this person is good for me. Or if I can see what is obvious that this person is bad for me, then stay away from it. Right? But if I can't come to a conclusion, I feel unsure one way or the other, then at that stage it would be good for me to make that istikhara and just come to a conclusion one way or the other. Okay, if you meet somebody who has all of the good qualities of a good person but doesn't have a lot of faith, should you accept that person as your jihad and try and make them a better person and just go through with it, or should you wait? When we say a lot of faith, we say a good person, there's some basic qualifications that we're looking for in a good spouse. One of those basic qualifications is what we call in the hadith, taqwa. And what I mean by that is fear of God. I'm looking for a spouse, their iman might not be the iman of Abu Dhar, that's okay. The iman of Salman al-Farsi, that's okay. But at least taqwa should be there, fear of God and submission to God. If I know that the person doesn't have taqwa, they don't have that fear of God, at that stage it would not be advisable to go into the marriage and think, oh, well, I'll go into the marriage and I'll change them. No, if you want to be successful, you have to look at the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt and you try and look for somebody at the beginning of the marriage that has that basic requirement. Because otherwise, there is no higher standard to pull the person to. Normally in marriages, there are disputes. But if I don't fear God, if the words of the Prophet, the words of the imams, if the words of God aren't enough to resolve these disputes, then it just becomes two individuals dealing with one another. It's going to be a very difficult situation. So I'm assuming that this person might be a sister who's asking. So we have specific hadith about this. They say, marry a man who has taqwa, marry your daughter to a man who has taqwa. They say, if this man loves her, he will honor her. If he doesn't love her, at least he won't do dhulm to her. He won't oppress her if he has taqwa. But if he doesn't have taqwa, unfortunately, many times there's a lot of oppression that goes on. So for a sister, definitely wants to do that. The other thing she definitely wants to look out for is to make sure that the potential husband has good akhlaq. He's nice and he's sweet and these things. Otherwise, it can become very difficult to live with somebody who doesn't have that basic akhlaq. So instead of going and making it my jihad, no, I'll wait, inshallah, I'll let the person better themselves. That basic level of taqwa and I submit to God, at least that should be there. Another question. Can a Sayyidah marry a non-Sayyid? Yes. A Sayyidah can marry a non-Sayyid, and actually it's recommended for everybody to marry a Sayyidah, that, meaning that the fatwa is there. And this practice was done in the time of the Ahlul Bayt. Many of the Imams, just look in the books of history, you see that the mothers of the A'imma, many of them were from different backgrounds. Iranians, Persians, I don't know, Romans, according to African descent. So Islam doesn't have this idea of only a Sayyid can marry a Sayyidah, or the opposite way, that only a Sayyid boy should, actually it's recommended. But if you do marry a Sayyidah, then remember she has a lot of respect according to like a Sayyid. Any Sayyid, they have a lot of respect because of the Prophet of Allah. So if you marry a Sayyidah, then that means you have to observe the respect and honor that a Sayyidah is to be given. But yes, it is allowed. And actually what happens is that we need to kind of reverse this trend. Because what happens is, because we have done this culturally, you end up with a lot of Sayyidah sisters who don't have a husband. Sometimes they write the offices of the Maraja. I mean, I've seen the emails, right? That there are five of us in this particular family, for instance. And I don't, there's no Sayyid boys in the area. And then now we need to get married. So, I mean, just think about it from a logical point of view. All of us are in society. We see the temptations that are pulling people the other way, pulling people to do wrong. Then we look at, just from a practical point of view, people have a need to get married. So I'm stopping them from getting married. I'm not making it easy for them to get married. And at the same time, I know the temptations that are out there. And we're told in the hadith that women need to get married early. They say when they reach the stage that they should get married, they're like fruit that are on the vine. If the fruit stays on the vine, the wind will change it. The wind will scatter it. It says to go over and get your girls married early. So realizing that there's not as many, for instance, suitable Sayyid spouses or suitors or whatever like that, definitely let's change and reverse this tradition. Definitely. First of all, it's allowed. Second, it's recommended. And just from a practical point of view, if we don't do this, we're waiting for a crisis to happen. There's a lot of stuff that is either being swept under the rug, or we don't know about, or we think we don't know about, or our heads are in the sand. But there's a lot of problems that are going on in our Shia community. So actually, let's go the opposite way and obey the instructions of Islam. Okay. Do we have any literature on the human side of the marriage of the Prophet and Lady Khadija and Imam Ali and Hazrat Fatima alayhi salatu wasalam, and how they enjoyed one another's company? We do have some hadith which explain how the Ahlul Bayt referred to one another, or how they were with one another. But some of the information which we have on marriage is actually from instructions from the Ahlul Bayt. Right? For instance, I'll just give you some examples. And these things are not necessarily things that specifically state, for instance, the Prophet was with, how he was with Hazrat Khadija, but they talk about the Prophet, how he was in his family life. So how he was in his family life, how he was for all of the rest of his wives, definitely he would be that way for Hazrat Khadija. So one of the things that they mention is actually that the Prophet of Allah and Amirul Mu'mineen used to help out in the house. The Prophet of Allah and Amirul Mu'mineen would actually help out in the house. We have in the hadith about the Prophet of Allah that he would cut the meat, he would milk the animals, Amirul Mu'mineen would sweep, he would bring water. Right? So the Prophet of Allah, we have another hadith, they say that Amirul Mu'mineen and Hazrat Fatima both went to the Prophet of Allah and they asked him to decide between them, to tell them how to live their life. So he said, those things which are your duty, meaning are inside the house, Those are the duty of Hazrat Fatima. Those things which are beyond the door, those are the duties of Amir al-Mu'mineen. But then at the same time, Amir al-Mu'mineen, so inside the house was her duty, outside of the house was Amir al-Mu'mineen's duty, but the seerah of the Prophet and Amir al-Mu'mineen was inside the house, they would help and they would provide assistance. And they have hadith which talk about the thawab of helping inside the house. So that's one thing. And then the respect that they had for one another. Just one example, because I mean, this is a huge subject. But yes, we do have some things like this. I just want to show again the respect that they had for one another. There's a statement or explanation of when Hazrat Fatima, salamullah alayha, when she was actually towards the end of her life, when the enemies of us had went and they had attacked her house. And then after that, they came to pay her respect and to show that they were actually apologetic, and they wanted to see her, and we apologize for what we've done. Now, Hazrat Fatima knew what the niyat of these people were. So when they came and they asked for permission to enter, then look at the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen, how he addresses her. He says, O free woman, he says that these people are at the door, and they would like to see you. They would like to come and they would like to ask for permission. They would like to talk to you. And she said, you know, she refused in the first time. Then he came back and said, look, they're insisting, they're asking. Do you allow them to come in? So she said, and in this situation, which she is upset, she is sick, she's on her way out, right? At this stage, look at how much respect she has for Amir al-Mu'mineen. She said that the free woman, in some of the hadith it says, is your kaniz. The free woman is your slave, and the house is your house. Do whatever you wish. So we do have some other hadith which describe their relationship and how they were with one another, and how close and how tight they were with one another. But some of the information where you're trying to build a book, for instance, you're writing a book or you want to read about the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt, you have to pick hadith from other areas too, and then together you'll build that picture. You won't find everything in those particular things. But we do have some of things of what their wedding was like or some of these different things. So we do have that. So now, alhamdulillah, the questions have come to an end. So, is it? Okay. Salawat bar Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.